It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 343. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or any tech question. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. And also on Facebook, send me your friend request at facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. And I will confirm and accept your friend request. I have a big show lined up of lots of email. There's no music at the end of the show tonight. I have a lot to get to. And first, I want to cover the schedule real quick for next week. On February 10th, Thursday, I will not be doing a show that night. I'm going to do it one day early. So I'll be recording live on Wednesday the 9th at 8 p.m. Thursday is my son Ryan's birthday. I have tickets for the Flyers game for him. We're going to be at that game on Thursday night. So I'll record the show Wednesday night live on February 9th. So if you want to join me live, come maybe Thursday night you're not available and you want to be able to maybe join us on Wednesday night. So come on by. And you can find the link on the Mike Tech Show website. When I'm broadcasting live, I always have a link directly to the chat room and the broadcast on Ustream. So it's very easy to just click on that. And then, of course, you can join the chat live by having a Ustream account. It's free. So just get a Ustream account and sign in, pick a nickname. So this way you can join the chat and actually type with everybody else, ask me questions before the show and after the show. So we have a good time. The first question, and I don't have an answer for this, so I need your help. It was tweeted to me today, and the question was, can using Skype overload a router? And if so, what are the fixes? There are tweaks that can be applied to help maximize your Skype performance. But Skype overrunning a router, I would say if that's happening and you have multiple Skype calls taking up the performance of your router, then I would get a router with a bigger processor, more memory, so the router can handle the traffic. That's really the only way, other than maybe isolating Skype to only be used certain IP addresses. So I really need a more specific question than just overloading the router. If anybody's run into this, you know, let me know. DG in the chat just made a great thing, QoS, so quality of service. You could actually dedicate on any decent router, you can dedicate certain protocols, certain ports to have certain performance levels. Give you an example. Let's say for my show, when I'm recording, I want to minimize the Xbox traffic from my kids. Well, I can put them at a lower priority to only use X percentage of the bandwidth in the house. And then I can have the rest of it if I want it. So that is certainly one way to take Skype and add a quality of service to the router. And that's going to be the performance options within those within a router are going to be specific to the that specific router. Now, there's a firmware, the DDWRT, to some Linksys routers. It was just mentioned in the chat. Thank you, Frank. we've talked about that in the past, where you can actually take an inexpensive router. Certainly when you get into the Cisco routers and some of the other bigger, higher performing routers, you have a lot more programming capability. You know, it gets very complicated very fast when you start upgrading and going to a big router, a higher performing router. So anyway, thanks for the tweet. And if anybody else has recommendations, you know, send them my way. Now, speaking of routers, let's get right to this question. And I have some comments on this. IP version 4 converting to IP version 6. I love the show. You provide a great service and do it with such style. My question is, with all the talk about IPv4 running out of addresses, which they are, the last bank of IP addresses has been given out already. Is there something I should be doing to prepare for IP version 6? Is there a difference between what a home user should be doing and what a business should be doing? This is Steve from Israel. What a great question. And we were talking about this in the pre-show. One of the things I'm going to have, a couple links to the IP6 versus, you know, IP6 and getting ready for it. The biggest thing that you want to really pay attention to is the World IP version 6 day. That is June 8th, this June 8th. What is going to be happening, and the biggest participants are Facebook and Google. That is a day which they are, for 24 hours, they are going to maintain their websites only using IP version 6. So this way, everybody can determine whether they can access Facebook and Google. I think it's great for those two organizations to step up for this. One of the things that you want to take a look at is the older operating systems. And I'm going to have a couple links in the show notes that can guide you to making sure that the operating system you're using can support IP version 6. Now, if you have Windows 7 or greater, not a problem. But depending on the flavor of Windows XP you are using, you could, may or may not be able to support IP version 6. You may have to execute a couple commands, add a service pack, because you got to have at least service pack 2 or greater, which you all should have. As a matter of fact, if you're running XP, you better be running at least service pack 3 and then applying the hot fixes after that. I have another article that will talk about that. So from a home user, that's all you got to worry about. For businesses, they have to worry about routers. And businesses that have older routers that do not support version 6, and maybe the manufacturer will not have any kind of firmware update, those companies are going to have to spend money and get a new router. This is where Cisco is just going to make a killing, where it's going to become, I believe, another Y2K kind of preparation, where you have to be doing testing, you're going to have to be doing lots of prep work before it finally cuts over. But I think you're going to see it in a phased approach for IP version 6. Important to stay alert and keep an eye on what's going on, and I will try to stay on top of this. I got to admit, I'm only entering into IP version 6 just because of this question, and I've just started looking some of these things up. And yesterday there was a great article in the Wall Street Journal about Google and Facebook. And I think, okay, this is very timely right now to kind of get everybody thinking about this and then making sure that we're ready. And I will make sure that we have the steps as we get closer and closer to version 6 being, you know, fully released, and everybody, well, it is released, but everybody embracing it. Well, I'll make sure that we have steps for what you can do at home to make sure you're ready, steps for business and what you should be checking. If you're consulting and you have clients, you absolutely have to stay on top of this. Start getting an inventory of the routers and seeing what versions they are, and and check online with the manufacturer, and are they supporting it? And simple as that. So it's all about the routers, all about the operating systems. It'll be interesting, some of the old legacy equipment that would need internet access. An example, what about an old DOS machine that may have to go on the internet for some reason? I don't know. You know, some vertical market application. They're the ones that could have run into a problem. I see this as we get closer and closer to June 8th becoming a more popular topic. Certainly, June 8th will be a great day to be able to make sure that you're ready and being able to test. Definitely stay tuned for more info on that as I have it, or if you want to share info on what you've been testing with or what you've been working at your workplace with IP version 6, let me know. Tell me the story. Share it. I will dedicate a show to that very topic, so you could send me more info so I can find out what you're doing. So, Steve, I hope that helps you, and great question. Thank you. This is a Server 2008 and Windows 7 group policy question. Hi, Mike. I love the show and have been listening for the last few years. One of my favorite shows was the one you did with Winston on the big migration you had a few months ago. I have a question for you or Winston concerning folder redirection, Server 2008 and Windows 7. Here's my setup. I have a new Server 2008 Active Directory box that I just set up for testing. I have a new Windows 7 Professional box for testing. I have been trying for the last week to get folder redirection set up on the Server 2008 box through either a login script or group policy, and I can't get it to work. On the Server 2008 box, I set up two folders called Documents and Downloads. I shared these folders out and gave all my users full control on both folders. I then opened up Group Policy Manager, expanded the default domain policy, then went to User Configuration, Policies, Windows Settings, Folder Redirection, and I redirected the Documents and Download folders with the following settings. Basic, redirect everyone's folders to the same location. I created a folder for each user under the root path. So he has //DC1Documents and //DC1/Downloads. The music, videos, picture folders are also set to follow the documents folder. If I log in to the Windows 7 box and open up Computer, the documents, pictures, videos, and music folders are all still pointing to /C:\users/the username/documents. If I click on Downloads in my computer, it says the explorer.exe can't open up the file, or there is no file associated with that type of file. I don't even begin to understand what's happening with the Downloads folder. Now I can map to the two shares that he talked about. That was going to be one of my first suggestions. Make sure that you can map to the shares that you've created and that you can write a file to the share. And I can create new files in both folders. So it's not a permissions issue. So right off the bat, it can't be a permissions issue. Help, I'm stumped and I have to figure out how to get this working. If you don't have the answer for me, do you think maybe you could forward this to Winston? I am going to forward this to Winston. I'm sure as familiar as he is with Server 2003 and 2008, he must have run into this problem before. Sorry for the long email. Never apologize for sending a long email. And he says, thanks, Mike. And this is Mark Williams. Well, here's the thing. First, you got to make sure that you're applying the group policy. And then you got to make sure that the group policy is taking effect. I would not do something as complicated as the folder redirection in working with a group policy. Create a new policy rather than the default domain policy. Never mess with the default domain policy. Create a test policy and do something like I'm going to give you a bad example, but change a setting in Windows. okay? And then apply the policy. And then you got to make sure you reboot. And then there's also a way to force. There's a command you're going to have to look up that you can force the execution of the policy. So what I'd like you to do is make sure that you're going through the procedure to activate the policy. Because what it sounds like is that you have a policy, but it's not being applied. You've done the right things by creating the folders, and you've definitely eliminated the permissions. So what you want to do now is I would practice with something very small, changing one option within Windows, and then checking that that option changed, that the policy indeed took effect. Document the steps that it took to get the policy activated. You know, this isn't easy. It sounds easy. But I know living in from the XP world and Windows Server 2003 and working with group policies, it's a little bit of an art in getting it to work and getting it to take effect. One of the things that you have to do, and Nightstar put it, it's GP update for group policy update /force. And sometimes you have to run that on a workstation. And here's what's interesting. I've ran that on a workstation, and you know what? It did not force the policy. So you have to be very careful and make sure that you got one policy working. And then, like I said, you're going to document those steps, then go back and redo it. And again, never, ever, ever edit the default domain policy. I want you to create a separate policy and then invoke and get that policy working, because you can get into so much trouble. And if you walk into a company and you start editing the default domain policy, oh boy, you're asking for trouble. So you always, so what's our mantra for backup? Backup, backup, backup. Test, test, test with group policies, and test it on a group of users or a group of test machines or test users, never the entire domain population. So you pick a target audience that you're going to test with, some test accounts or some test machines, and then you have a nice test group policy, and you go play to your heart's content. And then once you document and you have it working and you know it's going, then apply that. Now, anybody that has tips on getting folder redirection working properly with 2008 Windows 7, let me know, and I will pass that on to Mark. Good question. A little more system admin, but that's okay. We like those questions. And this is a network admin, network engineer career question. Hi, Mike. I've really enjoyed listening to the show. I have a career question that hopefully you or the Mike Tech Show community will be able to provide some insight on. I have my bachelor's in business from a state university. For the past 3 years, I have been working as an IT field technician for a large pharmacy chain supporting a number of stores, store computer systems, server, workstations, registers, photo kiosks, printers, and various other electronic equipment. I am eagerly looking for a change and have been thinking a lot about becoming a network administrator or network engineer, but don't know the direction to take. I have been studying to take the CompTIA's Network Plus certification exam. That's good, good start. And am considering Cisco or Microsoft certification. It's two big differences there, and we're going to get into that. I'd really like to get experience in this field, but I'm not sure how to obtain it. Do you have any ideas I could use to gain experience? I need to get a tech job, get a job in this field. Do I need to go back to school? I look forward to hearing your ideas. Well, you've got a lot of experience in the field in doing maintaining the system work, and that's great. You need to build, like my previous, an exact setup, like the previous email. You need to set up a server, workstations, in your house, and you could do this virtually. And what you need to do is play and practice. Now, you mentioned Microsoft or Cisco certification. They are two very different tracks to be certified. To be certified in Cisco, you are pure networking. You will not be working with the Microsoft operating system. It's going to be Cisco administration, routers, firewalls, VPNs. It's going to be all of that, which is absolutely pure networking and network I would call a network engineer that is required. A network administrator is administrating, like we talked about, group policies, admin, security within the Windows environment. By the way, there's also a security track just within the network engineering track for all of the Cisco courses. You really got to decide, what do you like better? Do you like working with the server operating systems and the Microsoft software? Now you're looking at a system administrator's job, the network admin, system admin, and there's a lot of laps depending, you know, there's a lot of crossovers. The smaller the company, the more hats you're going to need to wear. If you're going to a big company, everything's delegated and separated. You're going to have your network engineers to take care of routers and understands the Cisco iOS, their operating system. And then you got your sysadmins that they take care of all the system administration on the servers. These are two different paths in a bigger company. In a smaller company, you need to know a little bit of everything, because they want to pay for maybe one or two people that can do it all, because they're not big enough to support a big IT staff. Where do you begin? You must decide first, do you want to go the Cisco path or the Microsoft path? And then build a lab within your house. There's lots of ways to get Cisco equipment on eBay with courses and the proper cables that can connect multiple routers, where you can start off and have a way to teach yourself. And that's a great way to get started. I wouldn't worry about the work experience yet, because you're not going to get a job until you can talk about what you've done on your own. And I want you doing that on your own at home and playing with it, so this way you can actually gain the experience. Now, Jay in the chat, you can download the Cisco Packet Tracer to create a virtual network. And I do know there are emulators. They're very good emulators for Cisco equipment, where you don't even have to purchase the equipment. And you could just set it up in your own environment to be able to test the switches. And maybe, you know, start out with that and start out running VMware Server, where you can have an operating system running, you know, a server, and then practice with doing Active Directory. Very important. No, understanding DNS. These are terms and things that you have to master in order to be able to become a system administrator. First, start playing with it and studying on your own. I think you're going to do well, because you're doing the right things now and you're starting out asking the right questions. And as long as you're motivated to explore these technologies, see which one you like. And then I would start maybe going for some of the certifications and the tracks, just some schoolwork to help you out. You may have to go back to being a internships is a way to go. I don't know if you can afford taking a cut in pay and becoming an intern. Some interns, you know, they don't pay. That's a way to gain experience. And I know companies are always looking for extra bodies right now that they can get at a reduced rate. So that's something that you might want to try. You definitely may want to look into, who do you know? Is there anybody that can take on a mentoring role with you? And that, I know that's hard, because you may not know anybody that has a position in that area, you know, of expertise. So that's something that you can try. I hope some of this helps. Certainly keep me posted on your progress. Thanks for the question. And this is from, and that question was from Chip Harris. So thank you very much. The subject of this email: you've been a guide for many years, but now I need more. Hey, Mike, my name's Mark, and I'm a PC tech up north in Quebec, Canada. before my comments, yes, I am French, and don't ask me why. I'm quite proud of it. He's got a little smiley face. Anyways, I've been listening to your show for a couple of years now, and you've always been a great source of inspiration for my work, my passion. I've educated myself in being a PC tech because I can't stand still for more than 15 minutes without doing something. Attending classes is killing me, and I can't even remember a thing afterward. I've been buying books, college class books. I went to the school library, told them I was in X class, and bought all the books. That's how I've managed to get some basic certifications, by buying only an exam session. It was important at the beginning because when you do this, there's always the risk where you think you know something and when you actually don't, or even worse, you have totally missed an aspect of your work. I was listening to show number 341 and thinking about the disk space problem you had on your computer server. I want to dive into servers myself, but I won't offer this service until I'm absolutely sure I can give a professional service. Sure enough, to bet my company, my life on it, I'm having problems trying to find a good resource, a resource to educate myself. I know the best way would be to attend the courses, but I don't have the time for this. I need to read something, and I'm not looking for a book. I'm looking for books, lots of them. There's a sheer difference between knowing an OS and actually being able to prevent problems by knowing the practical side of the job, not just the technical. This knowledge is usually shared from a person of experience to another, like in a school or a work environment with seniors. I have no problem with courses at all, but they'd have to be correspondence. I have a weird agenda, and I would study at night. This email is already much, much longer than I thought. But can you blame me? I'm French. I can't. That's funny. Marc Antoine Favre. And this is, I don't know if I pronounced that right. You're doing a wonderful job, Mike. Thanks for being the beacon you are. Keep up the work. Bye. You have the problem of having the attention span and to be able to sit in a class and listen. You want to work on your own. And I get that. I know a lot of people like that. And you need a stack of practical books that you want to read. You don't want to just read Understanding Windows Server 2003. But you know what? Like I've said, and this seems to be the topic tonight here, reading a book and then executing it and doing it are two very different things. You have the Microsoft way of learning and being able to answer questions to pass a Microsoft exam. But that sometimes is in direct contradiction of the real world. And I learned that the hard way of being in the corporate world. And I always had this debate with my senior network engineer, where she was certified and would say, well, Mike, look, now, Microsoft says to do this, 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 and that's how I would have answered that to pass the test. But look where we are now in the real world, in the corporate environment, and we have to get this going, and you know, we end up doing Y instead of X. There's no way for you to learn all that until you try it. And are you going to run into all of these things? No. The big thing is getting your hands dirty and playing with it and just get enough to where you know where to look to solve the problem. You have lots of resources out there. There's forums, but then again, you got to be careful which forum you're getting the advice from. You got other podcasts out there, Podnuts Daily, Podnuts Pro, all the shows, Steve Cherubino. You got my show. You got great websites like TechNibble and other things that will help you with different utilities and things that you should be doing. It's a collection of knowing where to go to help solve the problem. And if you have to be a confident problem solver in order to succeed. And that's the key to this. You're never going to learn everything. Look, I don't know everything. That's why I put it out there where if I don't know it, I'll give my opinion on it, and then I'm going to ask for feedback, and I get great email feedback from you, the listener, and then I share it with everybody. Like I said, I'm the conduit between everybody in the Mike Tech Show community and the Mike Tech Show family. It's important. Don't try to know everything. You want to know enough that's going to put you in a position where you can begin a career that you're happy with. And that's all you can really ask for to start out. If you try to take on too much, it's going to be overwhelming and you're going to be like, ah, forget it. And you're going to throw your hands up. So what is that level? How much is it? Well, it's a good question I just asked myself. And you have to answer it for yourself as you begin training and teaching yourself. And you have to start by setting up the test environment and teaching yourself. I say this over and over again because it's important. And not only that, it's important for the job interview of your first job that you're going to go for that junior tech position or whatever you're going for. And the first thing they want to know is what's your experience. And you don't have to worry about, you know, you don't have the formal jobs that you went to. You're going to talk about the problems and experiences that you created in your home network. It's going to show your passion. It's going to show that what you'll do on your own to learn and that you are self-motivated and that you are someone that can learn. And let me give you a hint here. And a lot of people don't realize this. When I was looking to hire for someone, I had to be careful not to hire someone that maybe was taught and has bad habits because they were taught from a big company that maybe taught them the wrong way, not the way I want. Remember, you're going to have to adapt to the practices and the environment of a company that you're working for, and they are going to provide some training to familiarize yourself with the environment. So keep that in mind. Sometimes I'm looking for someone that's trainable more than they got all this knowledge. Because you know what? If they were taught the wrong way, they're going to bring that with them. So I sometimes would look for the person that can think on their feet, know where to go to be able to help solve problems. They listen, they take it all in, and then they can come up with a solution, a recommendation, be part of a team. These are all very important that goes along with all the bookwork. You want a stack of books, that's great. But don't forget all these other things that I'm talking about that go along with that. Do we have practical books to be able to? I got to admit that I am not up on a lot of the latest books. I always go to, for reference, the Understanding Outlook 2007, because I need to look at Outlook 2007 question. Certainly, and Microsoft Press has a lot of great books for understanding their network operating systems, and understanding Server 2008, understanding Active Directory. Pay close attention to some of the Microsoft books. Rain loves the Cybex. My favorite publisher is O'Reilly. They are my favorite. An O'Reilly book gets right to the point. I love all my O'Reilly books for years and years. That's all I would buy. If you looked at my bookshelf, you're going to see O'Reilly as the publisher on most of the books. They have tremendous books. We need recommendations for beginner's book. I would take a look at Understanding Basic Networking, those kind of titles. Networking Essentials, I think, is actually a track within Microsoft, I think, for certification. I'm not sure, at least it was years ago. Networking Essentials is, I believe, a good place to start. that's going to help you with all the terminology, all of some of the basic understanding. You got to know subnets and TCP/IP. You got to understand what a subnet mask is. There are things that you need to know that are basic part of networking essentials. I would begin there and then start building out your lab and take it from there. Lots of education questions here. This is great. This is a Linux SUSE VGA ports question. And this is from Nick. Hey, Mike, I have installed Linux SUSE 11.1 on an HP ProLiant DL380G7. I know exactly what server that is. After installing the OS, the front VGA output signal was fine. But when I switched the output to the rear of the server, the signal was all washed out. Like if it does not have any graphics card, any suggestions would be helpful. I know this sounds basic, but with the Linux SUSE 11.1, and this gets a little tough with HP. I had this video problem. In fact, Winston and I had this video problem with Small Business Server 2008. You need to know the exact chipset of the video cards, and you got to make sure you nail the proper Linux driver for that chipset. You may even have to open up the server and look at the chipset. Get the chipset and then search for the proper driver and make sure that that's part of the kernel and part of your Linux installation. Download the driver and then, of course, use the proper procedures to integrate that driver into the Linux version that you have. And then test and see what happens. Either that or there's a problem with that port. And I hope with the server that you mentioned, you should have. And I know it comes with like 3 years basic support. Call HP and ask them. Hopefully they support SUSE 11 on their hardware. I'm not sure. I know years ago it was always Red Hat, but I think they support SUSE. What you want to do is call them. They may have a test for you to run on the back port because you might have a hardware problem, which they may have to swap something out. And if it's not a card, I have a feeling that's integrated into the motherboard. You might have a bigger issue here, and you might have to have them come out and swap out the motherboard. So don't discount that. But first, let's make sure you got the proper driver. This is from Jim, and this fits in perfect with the topics tonight. Thank you for taking the time to read this. Any information that you can provide will be helpful. I am considering some training with a firm called MyComputerCareer.com. I visited with them yesterday and was surprised at their approach to the admissions process and how they select candidates for their program. I've come across so many folks recently who are trying to change career paths with no experience in the IT field. And it looks like to me that many companies are simply taking advantage of the stimulus money to train these folks without really giving them the hands-on training so they could have a reasonable chance of succeeding in the field. Even though this firm has fancy marketing materials that paint a glowing picture, my gut tells me that this firm may be more realistic in the expectations that they set out. And it is worth my time. And is it worth my time to do further due diligence and give serious consideration to pursuing this training? To that end, I'm trying to get any information that I can, as this training cost would be almost $20,000. You're going to make that kind of an investment. You definitely need some feedback on this company and my computer career. So what we're doing is we're asking everybody out there, if you got any feedback for this particular company, let me know. But I'll tell you what, Jim, you're going to have to really do some homework here and search, you know, Better Business Bureau, search, you know, some of the standard places, look online, looking for independent reviews of this company. Basically, I have questions about a couple of the subjects. First, the program advertises being a program member of the Microsoft IT Academy. I can find lots of Microsoft information, but I'm having trouble finding any independent reviews that come from reputable sources. So I would appreciate any thoughts that you have on this. Boy, it's going to be hard. If you're already doing the looking and you don't find anything, boy, what can we recommend here for Jim? Also, I would appreciate your opinion on the following. The program will allow me to obtain 8 certs. Wow, 8 certifications. My position is that the certs are not worth the paper that they are printed on without training. This firm is offering 32 hours of hands-on training at their facility for each cert, a total of 256 hours of hands-on training, plus access to all associated textbooks online. Don't be overwhelmed with that. There's a lot of places to be able to go online for the books like that, so don't be overwhelmed with that, or don't be impressed, which I would be responsible for studying on my own. The certs are, you have Microsoft Certified Professional, Desktop Support. He lists them all here. I know that you're very busy, so any opinion would be greatly appreciated. As always, thank you for all that you do and for your listeners. Best regards, this is Jim. All right. What, Jim, it sounds like they do all the right things. Here's what you need. You need to talk with some recent graduates of their program. I know asking for references may be a... you're always going to get something good, but you know what? Ask, say, hey, I want to talk to a recent graduate. I want to know, what's your job placement record? How do they help you with placing jobs after this? You want to visit the job placement office before you even begin and say, if I graduated right now, what kind of opportunities are there here that you're going to help me with? And let's see what, you know, if they can put their money where their mouth is, you know, and let's see if they can put up, you know, put up or shut up. Ask the hard questions. They want you. Okay. They need you more than you need them. They want your money. So for them to do that, they got to prove worthy of you writing the checks. Ask. You want references. You want to talk to some people that have graduated, and you want to see, hey, what do they have? They may not even have a job placement office, and that's something that you want to look into. But most places like this, they have something like that. You're asking all of the right questions, and all I can say is if anybody has any experience or they know someone or they have direct knowledge of mycomputercareer.com, send me an email. And I will forward and put you in touch with Jim so we can help him out and make the proper decision here. But it fits the main topic tonight, which, you know, I didn't even realize until all the emails here, on training, certification, being able to gain experience. Very, very, very important. But, you know, as Barb in the chat just put in there, and I mentioned earlier, BBB, the Better Business Bureau. Check them out. Make sure there's no complaints. And that's easy, because once you go in there, they ask you for a phone number or their URL. Put the URL in, it should come up. And if they have too many complaints about the organization, move on, go to training somewhere else. There's lots in your area. I want to take a moment and thank everybody who has been using my link to Amazon.com for your purchases. And if you haven't, go over to MikeTechShow.com. On the left-hand side of the website, there's a link to Amazon. If you are purchasing anything, click on that link. And when you make that purchase, I will get a commission from that. And it takes a couple months to get it, but it's worth it. And you guys have been doing great. As a matter of fact, I want to thank the person who it just shipped yesterday. They bought a $1,600 TV from Amazon, and they used my link. Thank you very, very much. That makes a great contribution to the Mike Tech Show. It only takes a minute to just go and use my link, and you are helping support the show, and I so appreciate everybody who has been doing that. Thank you so very much. That is it. I will be back next week. Remember, Wednesday night, not Thursday, so Wednesday at 8 o'clock, and same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. please visit techpodcast.com.